Downtown Jacksonville is experiencing a great deal of growth, and it looks like there's more on the way. Some good news to share just ahead this morning. And good morning to you. We are live from Studio 5 here at First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to grab our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, the latest on the state of downtown as we welcome Jay Gordon of Downtown Vision. What are your questions? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, author and women's advocate Donna Orender on her new book, Wowsdom. Plus, it's the first water triathlon ever on the St. John's River. We'll hear about the River Comes of Age tournament and how you can be part of it. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the state of downtown. For decades now, it's been a long string of false hopes and broken promises. Grand plans for major improvements in the city's urban core have been introduced over and over again with lots of fanfare, only to fall by the wayside. That's actually started to change in the past few years, particularly since the creation of the Downtown Investment Authority. More than $35 million has been invested into downtown projects by the DIA over the past 4 years, and it's starting to pay off. This is all part of an improved relationship between different interested parties pushing for more commercial and residential growth downtown. You can learn more in this week's latest State of Downtown report by the advocacy group Downtown Vision. The report came out yesterday, and it's all online at downtownjacksonville.org. Jake Gordon is CEO of Downtown Vision, Inc., and he's here now with more. Hey, Jake.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So as we talk about downtown's vision and downtown growth, what are your questions and comments? What would you like to see happen downtown? We're talking about the urban core this morning. We want your calls. 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and already getting comments on our Facebook page. We'll get to those in a few minutes. Okay, so a 36-page report you guys released yesterday, full of charts and graphs and all that stuff. But people can look online at it. The main message that you're promoting, Jake, is that we're seeing some positive forward motion when it comes to downtown Jacksonville. That's good news.
Yeah, absolutely, Melissa. I mean, I think the thing, people are right to be skeptical about downtown. I've only been, moved to Jacksonville about 3 years ago, so I do know that there is maybe a history of false starts, but we really are seeing progress now. You mentioned, thanks to the Downtown Investment Authority, their CEO, Andre Wallace, and also the mayor, Mayor Curry, and city council, you know, a bunch of great leadership. We try to collect all of that for our downtown and really present kind of what's happening in the last year, 2017. And you see almost exponential growth. We have about, if you count all the projects that have been completed in 2017, under construction in 17, or proposed, it's about $3.5 billion in investment. And to put that in perspective, we looked at back from 2000, since our first report, all the way till the last report before this, and that was about $2.5 billion in investment. So almost $1 billion more proposed than all of those 17 years combined. So it really is exponential growth that we're very excited about.
Right. Lots of investment. We're seeing new construction, new businesses. In fact, dozens of new businesses have made the commitment to come into the urban core. Also, we're seeing a lot of demolishing and construction going on. Demolishing of old buildings, renovation of historic buildings, and new buildings. Let's talk about what's in the pipeline. In particular, let's talk about two areas of downtown. The Laura Street Trio, the buildings along Laura Street that for years we've been hoping to see some completion on those. And then also the Shipyards District, which Shad Khan is working to develop. And on the South Bank, it's called The District, a new development that developer Peter Rummel is working to develop. Those three nodes all seem to hold a lot of potential. Can you bring us up to date on those?
Sure. So, you know, all three of those are unbelievably massive game-changing projects. You know, developer Steve Atkins with Southeast Development and the Laura Street Trio and the Barnett Building. I walk by that every day because geographically it's right in the center of our North Bank core of downtown, and there's construction actively happening there. And it's unbelievably exciting, and exciting also because UNF, University of North Florida, is going to have an entrepreneur center and be one of the main tenants in one of those buildings. And so bringing another university downtown with the Eds and Meds being a crucial part of downtown. You know, you mentioned the shipyards in the district. I mean, these projects don't come along every day. These are huge projects that are amazingly important to our downtown. I do think that to get them right, it's going to take a little while, but the fact that they're on the horizon really shows kind of the possibility and the potential for downtown. I know someone like Peter, who is generally a suburban developer with Hilton Head, South Carolina, Amelia Island, Sawgrass, Celebration, Florida. This is kind of his first major project right in the middle of a downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievably exciting for people like us that really care about the urban core that this kind of scale of project is happening right in our midst.
We'll go to your calls in a moment about the urban core and the state of downtown at 549-2937. Jake, some interesting numbers in this report. About 55,000 people work downtown, but only about 5,000 live downtown. Although demand is high for residential units, 96% are occupied. That's good news. But getting at least 10,000 people to live downtown, hasn't that long been the goal of advocates like you?
Absolutely. That's the magic number usually for downtowns across the country and the world. I think that to downtown truly succeed, it needs more residents. You know, every neighborhood of Jacksonville is great because of the people that live there. And you noted the imbalance about, you know, we're still a very 9-to-5 working downtown relative to people. We do have a number of dedicated residents that do live in a number of different places in downtown. But you know, we have about 3,000 units, meaning places to live residential in downtown, but there's almost 1,000 under construction right now. So about 25% increase there. And then if you take all those units proposed, it's another 2,500. So if all of the units that are under construction and proposed are actually open at some point, that will get us to our magical number of 10,000 in the 3-square-mile area of downtown. So in just a few years, you could see a lot more people living in downtown. And that will really change everything from a standpoint of, you know, buying power for retail, you know, shops staying open later. Like right now, we're very much a lunch crowd, and then all of those things could change as more people start living there.
That's a big challenge. Is the other big challenge, this is my very unscientific observation, just based on the feedback I get, the perception of people in the suburbs, which isn't an accurate perception, but the perception that downtown isn't safe or that there isn't adequate parking to come in to the city. Neither of those things is true.
They aren't, and I appreciate you saying that, but the perception is there, and so we have to really be cognizant of that. I think that, you know, a downtown to succeed, it's also a collection of great destinations. So if you think about, you know, Sweet Pete's and Candy Apple Cafe or the new Calford Chop House, like, you don't have to generally think about, oh, well, there's nowhere to park, and maybe, and so I think a lot, you know, both of those places have drawn people from all over Jacksonville, and so people don't seem to be that worried to come down for a Jaguars game, but somehow there's this lingering perception otherwise. We have all of the biggest events in downtown, and JSO does a fantastic job of keeping everyone safe. The statistics bear that out. So I think that, you know, old habits die hard. I think that, you know, younger people generally are much more open to coming to downtown. And I think, you know, while we're building it for everyone, I think that you see kind of a sea change in terms of the perception. You know, if you come to First Wednesday Art Walk, which we put on every first Wednesday, you know, no one feels unsafe. There's a great vibe in the air. It's an amazing experience. So we don't, you know, it is difficult to really change people's perceptions. The only way to do that is for them to experience it and have a great time downtown, which we feel like they can.
All right, let's go to some calls now for Jake Gordon, CEO of Downtown Vision. Their new State of Downtown report is out. Some good news, some growth, some new projects. What are your thoughts about all this? Questions, comments, 549-2937. Give us a call. Paul is calling from downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Gordon and Ms. Melissa? How are you?
All right, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I'd like to, I've been downtown for 13 years and seen a lot of good progress and a lot of promises that haven't been kept, but I see a big growth in what's going on down here now. I wonder if we couldn't extend the downtown concept all the way out to 95. With what's going on in the La Villa area right now, lots going on. There's a lot of new construction. And the downtown thought is that it sort of stops east of Jefferson and not continued on down to 95. Mr. Gordon, what's your thought on that?
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, you know, the La Villa neighborhood alone, an unbelievably historic place in Jacksonville with the birthplace of James Weldon Johnson and a number of amazing historical amenities. Obviously, the Prime Osborne is there, but you're right. There's kind of this perception that past the courthouse, it really doesn't extend. I know that the DIA and also JTA. So JTA is building its Jacksonville Regional Transportation Center. You know, there's already a Greyhound station that's open over there if you haven't been there recently. So all of the public transit of Northeast Florida, not just Jacksonville, but this whole region is going to be centered at that regional transportation center. You know, an amazing project by JTA CEO Nat Ford and his team. And so you already are going to see a big change over there. And I know that DIA and JTA are doing a lot of planning. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of kind of interested individuals to be investing in that area. But I do think before long, you'll really see that area grow and kind of expand downtown in that way.
Let's go to Karen on the south side. Hey, Karen. Good morning.
Yes, I'm Carolyn, and I'm just saying that we come to the symphony a lot, and we do not have a good experience. Well, we have a wonderful experience in the symphony, but the area around Symphony Hall, Jacoby Hall, is not a pleasant experience at all. It's dark. The landing at night is just dreadful as far as outside appearance is concerned. The bus terminal is there. You can't take a walk. So I think all the attention has been on the shipyards side of Jacksonville, but there needs to be more attention and improvement on the area around Jacoby Hall because we have a wonderful symphony, and we love coming there, but we do not like eating there around in that area. It just isn't pleasant.
Okay. Well, you know, they are taking down, they did take down the old bus station, Karen. They've moved that.
That's true,
one change. But yeah.
Yeah, it's an empty space.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to go in its place. I bet Jake knows. but thanks for your call, Karen. All right. So, and she brought up the Jacksonville Landing too, which is certainly a sticking point in your otherwise positive narrative. Jake, what about her comments?
Well, yeah, thanks, Carolyn.
Carolyn, yeah.
So the, you know, the symphony is an amazing amenity. You know, the Times Union Performing Arts Center is a great amenity. We don't always haven't in the past done a good job of activating the outside. So the Omni is right across the street, another amazing amenity, the Omni Hotel. But, you know,
good restaurant in there.
Great restaurant in there, but a lot of like the lighting to the signage to a lot of other things. I know Councilwoman Lori Boyer has really been focused on that in terms of being focused on the river and kind of the activation. So there are a number of things in place. You know, I think the landing, you know, everyone has an opinion on it. I do think that, you know, one of the things is that that's one of the places where we can have kind of larger events in downtown. And it's probably true that we need more of those. You know, the mm-hmm. Times Union Center, you know, how are we expanding out the back to really appreciate all of the waterfront and all of the great things that are out there? And so there's kind of a lot of things we can do. But it is true. We have a lot of work to do in terms of people having experience. You know, one of the things we focus on in downtown is like, we want people to go to more than just one destination. If they just go to two, we'll double it. So the fact that Carolyn, we have to do a better job of people going to the symphony, going to somewhere else. And so that's where something like a Calford Chop House paired with the Florida Theater, we feel like that already is kind of having things. And, you know, there's a number of good projects that could help that area, you know, immediately. Because that's the thing about downtown is it's kind of tiny little micro neighborhoods. If you go to the symphony, you're parking right there. You're really right next to the landing. You're right next to the Omni. And then there's a couple of parking lots, CSX buildings. So, mm-hmm. you know, every little area is a challenge. But I think there are a lot of good plans in the works for that.
There's this standoff in the works, this sort of Mexican standoff between the mayor, Lenny Curry, and Tony Slaman, the owner of the Jacksonville Landing. There's litigation. They don't get along. Nobody's happy with the landing's role in downtown, I think even including Tony Slaman. What do you think should be done with that spot?
Well, that's a great question, Melissa. You know, we do think the landing is incredibly important to downtown. It's an unbelievably important piece of land right there in the middle of downtown. And when the landing was, you know, at its best, I think that's when people really remember it. And so now, you know, with the things that have been going on, it's definitely not great for downtown. I do think that from a private development standpoint, all of, you know, downtown is going to be thanks to the public investment by Mayor Curry and the administration and the DIA, but also thanks to a lot of private investment. And so downtown is going to succeed with public-private partnerships, and I think the key with any partnership is trust on both sides. As you know, just even reading the articles in the newspaper, it feels like trust has devolved between those two. There hopefully has to be some way to reconcile that, but you know, it is really important to downtown, and you see that. And so, I private development is important, and I'm not sure how that will reconcile itself. But
would you like to see a whole new private development there, or would you like to see a park there? What would be your ideal?
I mean, every amenity that we have in downtown, we want to be used to the highest and best use that it possibly can be. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that all of these investments show in our State of Downtown report is just kind of adding more and more things, you know, even from Daly's Place now and Intuition Aleworks over in the entertainment district. You know, you went from having like really, okay, you're going to one or two things. Now you're going to a lot more. So I definitely think we want to see people maximizing their use. You know, that is difficult because sometimes with the lawyers, and I am one, it kind of
takes a long time.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we ruin everything, but it tends to be good to.
I wasn't going to say that. You said that, not me, Jake. So, but you know, but that honestly, would you prefer to see as the head of Downtown Vision? What would be your specific vision for that piece? If you could design it any way you wanted, would it be parkland? Would it be stores? Would it be bars? What would you put there?
Well, the DIA did a really great charrette, I think, a couple years ago with their board members that know a lot about downtown. I think my comments in there was like, one of the things that's interesting is if we're celebrating the river, the landing as it exists right now, you can't really see the river down Laura Street. And then the other thing I really think is important
is open up the river.
Potentially. I mean, yeah. That's one of the things. You see the landing, which is great, but you don't see the river when you're way up Laura Street, and you could see it. And so the other thing is also the setback. So the setback gets incredibly narrow, which means the river walk as you get by the landing. And so one of the things we've seen in other cities is, you know, a 10-foot, 15-foot setback is fine. But if you do like a 50-foot setback, you still have the same development opportunities, meaning like you can still make as much money as long as that's a dedicated setback. So in my work in Camden, New Jersey before that, we started building the river walk a little narrower along the water, and then it became much wider, which was, you know, valuable. So I do think being able to get back and forth there is important because we're trying to showcase the river. So I know there's a lot of ideas out there. I think it's going to be, you know, we've got great leadership at the city and Mayor Curry, and I'm sure, and now new council president Aaron Bowman. So, you know, I'm sure that things will work out. The good news is that I know that these leaders care about our city and we care about our downtown. And I think we need that area to really thrive.
Let's go to Terry on the south side. Hi, Terry. Good morning.
Hi, I'm always calling in when Jake is on, so thanks for having me. But I own FunForFirstCoastKids.com, and we just wrote a blog about 7 free things to do for families in Jacksonville. So it's like go into Sweet Pete's and play games, go to Mocha with the free creator space, the main library with the maker space, Henning Park with the kids zone. So I just want all the families to know that there's plenty of free fun in Jacks, and if you are a member of Mocha, you can park for 2 hours for free at the Duval Garage, similar with the library. If you go in the library, your parking pass at Duval Garage is validated. And Jake, what we would like is transportation from St. John's County to downtown so moms that are home during the day can come and, you know, hang out downtown, and then, of course, on the riverfront to add a park into whatever you're planning. And our families from Jacksonville, they would go from San Marco and take the bus downtown and do everything downtown. And we kind of want to do that too. So help us out.
Yeah. Okay. And that's Fun for First Coast Kids. That's her website. Jake.
Yeah. Thanks, Terry. Yeah. I think you mentioned kind of a lot of things because it's all about the transportation opportunities. And so JTA has a lot of things in the works. The Skyway is being rethought. You know, that's kind of the pedestrian extender. You think about the JRTC, you'd probably come in there in La Villa. So then it's about getting you kind of, you know, safely over. And so we mentioned safety is not really an issue, but the perception is. So it's about making families feel safe in downtown. I will say, you know, from the main library perspective, it's just unbelievably beautiful if you have not been in there. I think that we could always do a better job of making it feel more friendly. around the front of it. I know Friends of Hemming Park has done a good job, but we still have challenges in Main Street Park with the transient individuals and otherwise. But both MoCA and the Main Library are incredible amenities for our city and our region. You know, for better or for worse, we have a lot of the most important, you know, cultural and entertainment amenities in our city are right in our downtown. So it really is important to all support, you know, these improvements. And I think we have a lot of things in the works, but it takes a lot of people and a lot of dedicated investment to care about our city, to care about downtown, to make that happen.
All right, let's go to a few emails for you, Jake. Here's one from Fabrizio in Riverside. I'd like to see the underused Jacksonville Skyway expanded further into Riverside and San Marco. That would connect downtown to residential areas, making it possible for people to use public transit to commute to work. They tried to get a Tiger grant, didn't they? A federal grant to extend the Skyway over to the new development over in Brooklyn along Riverside Avenue. They didn't get it. Well, so what about the Skyway?
Well, I'm so CEO Nat Ford from JTA and the JTA board and Jacksonville Transportation Authority, they have huge plans, which is great because, you know, from the First Coast Flyer, which is the bus rapid transit from the Skyway. And so from a Skyway perspective, they are dedicated to keeping it, but retrofitted. And so then you have the U2C model, which is this automated vehicles that could be more like pods that would be much more accessible. One of the challenges with the Skyway right now is that the time it comes, you know, is 7 minutes. So if you want to take it to the South Bank, at best it's every 7 minutes. If we could shrink that time in a place like Miami, they have a similar system. It goes through the Brickell neighborhood, goes through downtown. They have kind of a two-loop system that is very, very speedy. So JTA's Brad Thoburn and others are really looking at how we can retrofit our system to really be very effective. And so it's kind of like, what does transit mean? Well, commuting is definitely one of those things that we want people to use. Right now, it's not clear how many people are commuting, but as downtown gets built up and as more residents go, you're really going to need a strong public transit baseline. And I think they have very good plans in the works. The first being the JRTC, which is where all of the local transit for the region is going to end up.
Joshua emails the show, couldn't there be more rentable places for non-affluent residents to live downtown? All I see are expensive condos. That's a big problem, although there are some new affordable housing units going up. But that's an issue, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think equity is a really important issue in real estate these days and in terms of building downtowns. I think that there's a tension between, you know, the cost of building, you need to get certain rents to get it back. And so that's kind of inhibiting development. And so if you lower rents, it makes it less likely to be able. So that's why when you see some of these projects go up, they're aiming for higher rents because that's the way their investment is going to pay off. I do think, though, that companies like Vescor, who is building a number of beautiful affordable housing. I think affordable housing as a title really does it a disservice because if you go over to the Lofts at La Villa, there are amazing properties there that anyone would want to live in, and they have a long waiting list. And so that's right there. They're also building a couple more.
What's the rent on those, by the way, the Lofts at La Villa?
You know, I don't actually know offhand. I don't want to speak out of turn, but it's definitely affordable because the way the state subsidizes it, it has to be under a certain amount for people to afford it. And so what it ends up being is more of a vetting process. You put your name on a list and then they make sure that you hit the affordable. And it's really more workforce housing. Mm-hmm. You know, I always think of like, you know, people working at Baptist or otherwise, you know, some of these jobs that are really the backbone of our economy, and having places for them is very important.
Brandy in Riverside. Hey, Brandy, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just have a couple comments about the safety that you guys say that downtown is. The problem is it's not always safe, and it has a lot of improvement to do, and a lot of our crime like bleeds to Riverside from downtown, it seems.
So why do you feel it's not safe, Brandy?
Well, last summer, I believe there was that shooting at the Art Walk, so it kind of made me and my husband hesitant to go. When we've gone to the landing in the evenings and stuff, it just doesn't, there's usually like a lot of like drunk homeless people. I know that sounds kind of rude, but, you know, they're kind of out of place, it seems.
Okay. All right. What about her perceptions there?
Well, I think it's a very, you know, reasonable comment in terms of the difference between the actual statistics. So in my mind, Jacksonville Sheriff's Office and Sheriff Williams, they do a fantastic job of keeping people safe. But at the same time, a lot of times when you feel the most safe is more of a perception thing. So, you know, transient individuals really have nothing to do with how actually safe as a statistic you are, but it doesn't give you a feeling of being safe. And so in for Downtown Vision, we call it experience creation, you know, keeping a better experience in downtown. We have a lot of work to do. A previous caller mentioned lighting around the symphony. You know, lighting is a really important element. I know JSO has SEPTED experts, which is crime prevention through environmental design. That's really about lighting, about making people feel safer. We do have our clean and safe ambassadors, which are orange clad ambassadors that walk around downtown. You know, they really are there to keep people safe. We don't have a lot of actual incidents. But it's really more about a perception of, hey, there's people around. I mean, that's one of the ironies is when do you feel the most safe is when a lot of people are around, which then statistically might be when you're more likely to have something happen. But, you know, when you go to, you know, these bigger events in downtown, be it Florida, Georgia or a Jaguars game or any sort of bigger event, you actually feel safer because there's just a lot of people around and it's the kind of vibe you want.
Let's take one more call for Jake Gordon, CEO of Downtown Vision. It's David. David in Arlington. Hi, David.
Hi, how are y'all today?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Love the discussion. Just a comment that long term, we definitely need a convention center downtown, but short term, you have to build up the downtown amenities as you're discussing. I've been to Denver several times, and they have this about 2 mile walkway that connects their convention center, their football and their baseball stadium. It's shops, it's boutiques, it's restaurants, it's bars, and something maybe along Bay Street between the landing and the stadium complex where it would be a walkway only with just amazing restaurants and bars and boutiques might be a place that would then begin to draw more people from outside.
All right.
I'll take that off air.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks, David. I think Denver is an interesting comparable to Jacksonville. You know, Jacksonville is a unique city in downtown, but I know like the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce has been looking at Denver as a place to really emulate. You know, we're a little bit, you know, it's really good because we've got some good other cities that we can try to emulate. It's a little chicken or the egg with the convention center. I think we definitely need it. And I know the mayor has talked about and the DIA has put out an RFP related to it, but it's kind of like, do you build up first or then you build it? You know, and I do think one of the things that I'm most interested in is someone that's relatively new to Jacksonville is like, where's the kind of, you know, the entertainment district that you take people to when you're from out of town? And so we've been promoting the Elbow, and I know, you know, downtown really should be that, but it's always like, you know, the way it's laid out is always a challenge. And even on Bay Street, we have a number of challenges because there's no real corridor where all of these amenities are grouped together. So I think that we really have some real good work to do on that. The good news is, you know, there's a ton of possibility in downtown with the investment we have now. It's really just a start. And so our State of Downtown kind of shows it, but hopefully next year's State of Downtown will be even more robust.
You can look at it online now, the new State of Downtown report at downtownjacksonville.org. Jake Gordon, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much, Melissa.
And much more still ahead later. Carrie Speckman will be by to talk about some things and ideas for your weekend. But up next, helping young girls become the leaders of the future. A conversation with Donna Orender next.
Downtown, when you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights so much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go down.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, a conversation with pianist Benny Green on Oscar Peterson, Betty Carter, and Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers.
He would say things like, "This ain't the post office," referring to the gig, meaning you don't keep it for life. You stay in the Messengers for a few years, and ideally you leave the band and start leading your own group.
All that on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
All right, here we go. Welcome back. Well, 7 out of 10 girls in this country feel that they don't measure up, either academically, physically, or socially. And they feel under enormous pressure to please everyone. These statistics confirm what we already know. The female leaders of tomorrow need our support today. In an effort to change the game for girls and women, former WNBA president and Gen W founder Donna Orender and her team have collaborated with leaders from many fields to create a new book that's trying to do just that. It's called Wowsdom, The Girl's Guide to the Positive and the Possible. Wowsdom is now a number one bestseller on Amazon.com, and it's full of advice, activities, letters from influencers and celebrities. Women and men from all walks of life have contributed to this book. So here with an update, we're pleased to welcome back to Studio 5 Donna Orender and internationally renowned photographer Susan Michael, who's featured in the book. Ladies, good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Donna, first of all, congratulations. It's hard to do a best-selling book. So believe me, you know how many books I get mailed in the mail every week at this place?
I do. I don't even think about that, right? I'm just focused on this one.
I am very happy for your success, that this book is doing so well.
Well, you know, really, Melissa, it's not about my success. I know it's our collective success. It's about our girls. And essentially, it's about my boys. And it's about our community, and every day to wake up and know that you're there working on behalf of helping the people that make our community great. I'm telling you, it feels amazing.
Now, you conceived of this book a little while ago as an outgrowth of your Generation Wow program. That's a program you created to empower and bolster the confidence and leadership of girls.
Yeah, you know, it all comes from Generation W, right? Which is educating, inspiring, connecting women. Women want to do more. It's really funny. As much as we have to do, we want to do more. And so we're worried about the girls. So we said, okay, let's do something for our girls. And this mentorship, leadership program that's a big part of WOW really has driven this. We noticed the connection between women and girls. And we said, or we asked, what happens if we unite the WOW of our girls with the women of with the wisdom of our women? What do we get? Wowsdom.
Okay, and one of the women you spotlight is Susan Michael. Susan, you are, I think, the first female president of Professional Photographers of America. Is that
right? Well, I was one of the first five. There's only been 5 or 6 in 134 years.
Wow. And so you're profiled in the book. What advice are you sharing?
I am. I was really excited. I've known Donna a long time. And of course, she's full of energy and enthusiasm. And this is an amazing project. And I did something on being extraordinary. And I think, you know, every day we have the choice to choose to be extraordinary. I don't think it's something you're born with. It's a choice we make.
Let me just say this thing about Susan, who also has a very successful book with these gorgeous flowers, and she's an amazing photographer. But for women, like, I go in this book for inspiration. And what I'm hearing more and more and more is women are doing the same, and they're reading it with their girls. And tonight we have a little reception, and Dr. Jeffrey Ann, I think everybody knows her from UNF originally, said, you know, I shared this book with my 6-year-old, my 17-year-old niece, and my 80-year-old mom. But Susan says, becoming extraordinary is a mindset. And then she writes about that. And I just love that.
And, you know, this book, I think, is important for, as I pointed out, particularly girls as they move into the teen years, because we see over and over again, that's when young girls who are full of confidence and spirit and positive self-attitudes, positive self-esteem, over and over again, when they go into the teen years, you see that their self-esteem take a nosedive.
Yes.
And it can be very difficult for them to get it back. And I have two daughters. So, you know, I watch this play out with my daughters, their friends, everything that they're going through right now. This is such an important way, I think, to address that problem. And I give you such kudos for doing it.
Well, I appreciate that. And yes, that is a reality. There's also this real insight into intergenerational connection. I know that doesn't sound sexy as words, but this idea of people with wisdom who've been around to share it, girls being open to other generations. And there's a lot of research behind the fact that girls really benefit from these kind of relationships. That's really important. You know, I think we all feel as sort of grown-up women, there's girls in all of us always, that if we could give to the generations behind us a leg up, right? Mm-hmm. That they don't have to ask the questions that we continually do is, why didn't I know this? Mm-hmm. And they're open to hearing it from women. You know, Susan has a great young assistant who's her niece, and they've traveled, you know, in the photography world, wherever. That kind of interconnectivity, that relationship is so valuable in helping us to build confident, strong girls with strong self-esteem.
Well, being able to be with the girls and teach them. My niece has two twin 14-year-olds, as Dawn has twin boys. And I've spent the last 3 days with them, and we've actually been doing some painting. And they were so excited to learn how to paint. And we've just had a great time doing that.
Well, you can pick up this book or order it online. It's Wowsdom, The Girl's Guide to the Positive and the Possible. Now a bestseller by Jacksonville's own Donna Orender. Donna, kudos. Thank you so much for being here. And quickly, do you have an event tonight?
We have, yeah. But on Saturday, we have a book signing at Barnes & Noble at the Town Center. And I want to also say that every bit of proceeds, every bit, goes to girls' leadership programs. It is totally everything. It's all about continuing to promote and develop girls' self-esteem, confidence, and leadership.
Come on out and meet Donna at the Town Center Saturday at
1 to 3.
And Susan Michael, profiled in the book. Ladies, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Still to come, Carrie Speckman. But up next, activating the St. John's River. We'll tell you about that, too. Welcome back. Well, the St. John's River comes of age this summer with new plans to activate the river as never before. There were a couple of things happening. First, the city's first ever St. John's River triathlon series. And then in the fall, an open water marathon race. Pretty cool. River advocate Jim Alabiso is here, along with Dr. Stephen Davis, associate professor of education at JU, and Chris Moling of DRC Sports. They're all here to tell us more. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
All right, Jim, let's start with you.
Sure.
You've long been an advocate of activating the St. John's River, mm-hmm. but now you're taking it to a new level. What's going to be happening?
Well, we teamed up with DRC Sports, Chris Moling, and because it's been a dream of ours to activate the river for many years, as you know. And so this was an opportunity to actually have a triathlon, Jacksonville's first triathlon based in the river. We've already had two events, one in June, one in July, and we have one coming up August 4th. And as you mentioned, we have the September swim marathon. But the real cool thing about it is, you know, we booked hotel rooms. We had 600 athletes for the first event, 600 athletes plus for the second event. So, we've had put 1,300 people in the water just the last couple of months.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So, Chris, how is DRC Sports getting involved in this?
We're an event management company. We do multi-sport events all over the Southeast. This event, originally our Jacksonville Triathlon Series, was in Fernandina Beach, but we kind of outgrew the space. And as we reached those numbers, we were looking for a new home. I met Jim, and talking with them, swimming in the river became a viable option for us, which caused us to bring the event downtown. We have plenty of room to grow. We're expecting this event to go to 1,000 and then hopefully upwards of 1,500.
And Dr. Stephen Davis at Jacksonville University, of course, JU is on the water. What's JU doing to support all this?
Everyone knows us for the marine science kinds of things we're doing to support Jacksonville and the river, mm-hmm. and we're trying to expand those kinds of things to education, in particular in water sports, which is a new area for us in our degree programs.
Right. Now, Jim, people can pick up the current issue of Arbis and read about this, so I encourage everyone to do that. You started this back in 2011 with your swim across the St. John's. Yeah. So you've come a long way with this.
Sure, yeah. It's a long time ago. Little did we know. I mean, the hopes were we would activate the river. And little did we know that in the short of time, we would be able to do what we're doing now. So we got a lot of support from the city, Lori Boyer, Waterways Commission, which, by the way, Dr. Stephen Davis is a member of. And so with the city support behind us, I think we have a lot of potential to do a lot of work to get the river activated downtown. Not only that, but our swim in September, we've asked to be part of the Global Swim Series. So we're not only attracting locals in Southeast, but we're attracting people from around the world, the UK, Australia, et cetera.
Let me ask all of you, too, as a follow-up, when we see algae blooms, not just here in the St. John's River, but in waterways around Florida, what's your position on encouraging people to get involved in this if they feel that it's not safe into the water?
One of the things that we do is we always test the water. Just, you know, with Chris, we've tested the water for each of the triathlons. We got, as a matter of fact, we've brought on Environmental Services, Inc. has come on board to sponsor our water testing. So that's going to be happening today or tomorrow, and to get a full spectrum of what's going on. So we'll understand what's going on in terms of water testing. And of course, if there's a problem, we'll call it.
But traditionally, we found that the river is actually a lot cleaner than people think. It's cleaner than a lot of the beaches. We do water testing in bodies of water all over Florida and Georgia. And I can tell you that the results we've gotten have been very positive in the river. So with the algae bloom and things of that nature, we're monitoring those things. But so much of that happens in the backwaters where it's very shallow, hot water, very warm. We're over here in the flood area. We're pretty protected.
And Stephen Davis, all of this activity is going to be taking place, what, right in the downtown stretch of the river, I assume, pretty much?
Absolutely. From Arlington through the area with all the bridges, that's the focus at this time for a lot of activity. You've even been speaking about that today. And so getting the water sports involved in that area brings the publicity that we need, and the profile improves so that we get the attention to Jacksonville that we want about this great river.
And with just a minute left till the break, how can people register and get involved, Jim?
Sure. They can register for the swim just by going to drcsports.com. And they can register for the upcoming triathlon August 4th and Up the River Downtown race in September.
All through DRC Sports.
Through DRC Sports website, correct.
All right, it's your chance to be part of activating the St. John's River, a series of events in the water. Thanks so much, Jim. Jim Alabiso here, along with Chris Moling of DRC Sports, Dr. Stephen Davis with JU. Guys, it's a great idea, and I wish you all the best. Also, pick up the current issue of Arbis and read more about this. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Thanks, Melissa.
A quick break and some ideas for your weekend and the next few weeks, actually, from The Spectator. Stay with us.
For years, some veterans who used shoulder-fired weapons have had long-term health problems.
Why can't I concentrate on stuff as long? Or, like, these fingers, they're no feeling no more.
Why didn't the military know the potential damage?
The science wasn't up to speed. It just didn't exist.
Plus, Secretary of State Pompeo on the Hill this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
PRI's The World Listens.
2042, according to census figures, is the year when white people will be the minority.
So I'm just wondering, is there going to be a Y2K moment on January 1st, 2043? Like, what's going to happen? I'm Marco Werman. Join us and hear the world this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The Trump administration hits a deadline for family reunification.
Border crossings decreased in June, but that is to be expected. Trump's family separation policy has made no difference.
What the numbers say about border crossings. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
The court-imposed deadline to reunite families has arrived, and we'll be on the Texas border reporting on what life is like for immigrants and the lawyers working to help them.
Well, I don't want to give up. I'm going to stay optimistic, even if everything's going against them.
I'm Ari Shapiro reporting from South Texas on the effort to reunite parents and children this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. We are going back to the 90s, it seems, this weekend, from Counting Crows to Paul Reiser. What are your plans for the weekend? Here, as she is periodically to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the queen of HQ trivia.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Thank you.
Carrie Speckman is here this morning.
And so good to be back.
It's good to have you back.
I've missed you.
I've missed you too.
Aw.
Hey, so before we get into the events, you're becoming like this world-class trivia person.
Well,
what is going on?
You're
all over this.
I play it a lot. I don't win it all the time.
But aren't you involved with the national HQ trivia now?
Well, they gave me a shout out the other day.
Very nice.
And to John Phillips and Heather Adams. And I even told him to do
two
a Duval.
Local
he even
celebs.
Did a big Duval.
I so just you're taking Duval National.
Yes.
I love it.
He didn't even know what it was. He's like, what does that mean before I say it?
Like, you can come see Carrie doing trivia tonight at European Street in San Marco and next, Sea Chasers next Wednesday.
First time, the Kenny Gilbert joint. It's my first
Very
week
nice.
Very excited.
Yeah.
I'm crossing the ditch.
A chance to meet Miss Pink Hair in person.
What a thrill it will be
it
for you.
It is a thrill.
Such
All right.
a thrill.
Okay, so that's happening. What else is going on?
We have Jurassic Quest Friday through Sunday, which is as touted as the most realistic dinosaur event. And I was there last year, and they are, well, I don't know that they're full size. I wasn't around at the time.
Are they the size of Sue at the Field Museum in Chicago? Are we talking like that?
There is one that's,
They're pretty big. Okay.
They look realistic to me.
But this is at the Prime Osborne all weekend.
Big kid event. Also, another good event for kids is Painting of the Paw Prints, which is for the new Jaguar season.
That's always fun, yeah.
Because, people run over those paw prints. You got to paint them. So it's at the base of the Main Street Bridge to the
to the stadium.
Yes. And it's gates K and H. If you go there, they ask you to register. but it's free.
You can see the Jackson DeVille, War of the Jaguars.
And you can say, I painted that paw. That's my paw.
That's cute.
Yeah. It is. It's fun.
That's a fun event. Okay. Also this weekend, the Axemen, they are undefeated and they play their final game of the season.
Final regular season game at UNF Hodges Field. If you can't make it to the game, actually, which you really should because they're lots of fun, you go on iknowjax.com. They're live streaming it. Why do I sound like I...
Too much late night trivia.
Yeah, you're probably...
What are you smoking at these trivia events? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm a big smoker.
Knocking back a few highballs? What's the story here, Spectator?
A couple of Manhattans and Pall Malls.
I figured you were more of a Harvey Wallbanger type.
I used to drink Harvey Wallbangers.
Really?
I did.
See, I know you. I have you pegged.
Just because it's fun to say that.
All right. Also Saturday, it's the Riverside Summer Food Truck Rally at Riverside Arts Market. It's very nice.
15 food trucks, and they're going to be a free concert. And it's also the 2018 Red, White, and Brew Freedom and Beer Run. So there's running and beer involved.
That doesn't seem like two things that should go together.
I did one of those once.
I don't think that would mix very well.
It didn't end well.
No, I don't think that's going to end well.
I heard there was bacon involved too.
That's always good. Now, Games, Art, and Music, one of my favorite local groups, they're doing an anime
show. Yes. Video games, Saturday. Charity art auction, food trucks, dancing, DJs, live music.
Very fun. Yeah. I know the guy that created GAM. He's a great guy. That's Saturday night at the museum, which is sort of a hidden gem in the city.
It's on Art Museum Drive.
Art Museum Drive.
Yes.
Okay. Now, getting into the 90s theme, not only do we have Paul Reiser coming to town.
Paul Reiser, what?
Saturday at Pontevedra Concert Hall. At Daly's Place, we have Counting Crows.
Yes.
So it's...
And Paul Reiser's on Stranger Things now. I don't watch it, so I didn't know that, but...
He plays an evil character on that show.
Dr. Owens.
Yeah, he's not a good guy
relevant.
On that show.
He's relevant again.
That's true. You're right. I had forgotten that.
But he'll be Saturday, Pontevedra Concert Hall. Fun fact, my manicurist learned how to speak English by watching Mad About You.
Get out.
That's true.
You know, that was a great show. And he's such a cute, fun person. I mean, go see him Saturday night. Go see Counting Crows the following Saturday night.
Plus Live. The band Live.
Plus the band Live.
They're opening for Counting Crows.
That's next Saturday. The Sharks play this Saturday in the sports complex. And as we mentioned, I forgot one thing. Cirque du Soleil coming
Cirque
to town.
Cirque du Soleil, Cotillo, a joyous procession. Bringing together the passion of an actor with the grace and power of an acrobat. That was my terrible French accent.
I can't think of Cirque du Soleil anymore without thinking of that scene in Knocked Up where they go to Vegas to see Cirque du Soleil. And I think they took mushrooms or something before. And so it's just this very bizarre.
Well, it's bizarre anyway.
I know. That's how I think
of it now.
It's
already bizarre.
Yeah, but they're coming.
It's
a great show.
It's next Wednesday through Sunday at the arena, obviously.
Okay, and go see The Spectator tonight at European Street in San Marco. If you've never been to one of her trivia nights, you really need to go.
It's a real treat.
It's fun.
Such a treat.
It's fun.
And you don't have to be the smartest person either, because I don't ask lots of smart people questions.
I've lost regularly, which shows that...
And you know, because you know a lot.
No, and I clearly don't, because
not
I lose
I
every
ask.
Time I've gone.
Well, that's because I ask not necessarily smart questions.
No, you do a good job
Pop
with
culture,
it.
Culture, you know.
Go see her and go to thespectator.com for more. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mersharp. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme composed by the symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A's up next with a look at new and notable developments in the Russia investigation. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 as well. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.